If you spent most of your formative years in an institution, how do you learn to live in the real world? It's a serious issue for people who have been incarcerated, especially women, who often face even more complex challenges. This past June, the National Organization for Women featured a panel of New Mexico experts on this topic at its annual conference in Albuquerque. It showcased the program Crossroads for Women and its transitional living program, Maya's Place. Eugenia Smith, a client of Crossroads, described the difficulty of transitioning from prison to everyday life.
I was a repeated offender, and it was because I didn't know nothing else, nor was I taught nothing else. I was a baby when I went into the penitentiary. And you would think that they would be some kind of skills that they would teach you to show you how to survive. And there's not. There's not. The only thing they show you is how to be a better criminal. So when I finally got out and decided I'm not going to do this anymore, there has to be a change. There has to be something. I was homeless. I had nowhere to go. I refused to go back to drugs. I searched high and low. I went to the Barrett House. I got into the Barrett House. I let the Barrett House know, you know, what my situation was, how I got to point A to point B. And I told them that I would like to go into a program that is going to show me that I'm going to benefit from. Not only am I going to be able just to go to your program, but I need to learn. I don't know how to read. I don't know how to write. I don't know how to fill out an application. I don't know how to do this, and I don't even know how to get on a bus. And at this time, I'm, 41? 41 when I started with Crossroads, about 41, beginning of 42. There's so many different outlets in Crossroads. There's so many different patient programs that you go to that teach you how to deal with trauma, how to deal with your mental status, also how to deal with your kids, to become parents, to learn, to teach you and to put you into schooling, to help you get a job, to help you get on SSI or Social Security if that's what needs to be. They will take their time out of their day to stop everything to handle a situation that's going on with the residents in Crossroads. And sometimes that's very important because sometimes in your life, when you've been damaged, raped, used, abused, and molested, you don't have somebody in your life to take the time out to teach you the right way to go. And these people actually take their time out to say, hey, let me show you a different route. It may not be the best route I can show you, but it's different. They take the time out to sit down and will teach you, this is A, this is B, this is C. And if they have to do that every day until you get A, B, and C right, they will do that. Not only that, they will put you in a house, in an apartment, teach you how to live in that apartment, let you know that you are safe, let you know that anything and everything you need, they will try to provide for you. They will come out and do home visits. They will come and visit with you. They will come and talk to you. They will see how your kids are doing. They will see how you are doing. They will see what you need and what you think you need to survive and teach you the things that you do need to survive. I'm not sugarcoating Crossroads because I am Crossroads. I am a woman that has started from the bottom, and they have taught me so many things, and I'm proud to be a Crossroads resident.
Casey Quirk, executive director of Crossroads, says women start from a disadvantage in prison because the career opportunities offered to male inmates are not offered to female inmates.
One of the disparities between the women's facility and the men's facilities is that when the women are at Grants in particular, they don't have access to vocational treatment services to the same extent that men have it. In fact, what we've heard from the women is that your sentence has to be of a certain duration because you're going to go on a waiting list, and it's for sure that you're not going to have access to vocational programs like HVAC and automotive. But what's interesting in the state, they will say, oh, yeah, well, you know, we spend money on the vocational stuff, and that's, you know, HVAC, automotive. And we're always saying, not for the women, not for the women. And so I feel like a broken record, and I feel like I'm constantly saying, you know, because the women get lost in that dialogue. And the truth is, women do not go into jail and prison the same way men do, and women will not come out in the same way either. You know, women are predominantly incarcerated for nonviolent crimes, right? So a lot of drug offenses, property crimes, you know, prostitution, you know, that kind of thing. But the other thing that doesn't get talked about, and again, I feel like the big old broken record on this, is that preceding all of that is trauma. Every single woman that comes through our doors is a survivor of trauma. And for most of those women, that trauma occurred for them when they were very young, and then it's been a cycle of re-traumatization. And you know, it's a little hard because there's a cycle that gets, you know, that gets rolling. It's a little hard to say, is that, you know, the trauma may have led to some drug use because we will numb out our trauma. Because that makes sense to me, because trauma sucks, and so we numb it out. Then there may be addiction, and then, you know, in that dependence on drugs and alcohol, we may get involved in criminal activity. In that, we may get, we may experience violence, and in that violence, you know, we may obtain a cognitive impairment, because that's another issue that we contend with a lot, our cognitive issues. This stuff doesn't hit the radar screen in that system. You know, it's just like a cattle call. Everyone's coming in, and, you know, they'll put people on the same formulary of medications. They'd rather have them drugged up and propped up in a corner somewhere instead of really try to attend to the individual needs.
If you're just joining us, this is Women's Focus. I'm Megan Kamrick, and this is a recording of a panel that took place this past June in Albuquerque during the National Organization for Women's annual conference. We just heard from Casey Quirk, Executive Director of Crossroads for Women. Betty Fleischman, Executive Director of the New Mexico Women's Justice Project, says adverse childhood experiences can have profound impacts on women into adulthood.
54% of the women incarcerated had some kind of psychological abuse or neglect. 48% were physically abused. 52% were sexually abused. And this is just what women disclose, so we always know there's more. 45% grew up in a family where there was violence in the family. 71% had a substance abuse issue. We know that. And 27%... as a child, had a family member incarcerated. And these numbers are higher. The study was done, which Casey left you back there, compared to California. Our percentages are higher for all of them. So, continue.
We can't not talk about trauma that's also caused and reinforced by the stigma. And the stigma for women, first and foremost, but women who've been involved in the criminal justice system, women of color, you know, the population of African Americans in New Mexico is 3%. And I have two black women here representing the population of women who've been incarcerated. It's true at Crossroads that our women are disproportionately women of color to the population of New Mexico. Mm-hmm. Native American, Latina, African American. We know this racism is alive and well in our system. The stigma connected to poverty, sexual orientation, transgender women disproportionately affected by violence, homelessness, addiction, you know, and then physical damage, physical scars. Because this is in the context of, you know, getting caught in this cycle, even if a woman wants help, getting help is tricky because, A, we have a lack of resources here in New Mexico. I'm not kidding, lack of resources. Like, you know, we don't have a bunch of treatment centers. You know, with the heroin capital of the world just being north of us, you would think we would have treatment aplenty here. No, we don't. There's no treatment option for methamphetamines. That's a huge drug of choice around here. I mean, we have a lot of problems that we don't have a response for. So when women want to get help, they also have a lot of internalized and realized stigma and oppression that they have to navigate trying to access any of those systems. And I know from going with women to try to access mental health services at some of our local mental health providers, that if you have scars on your arms from shooting dope, you might get treated like as just, you know, one of those drug addicts. You know, so there's a lot of negotiating that have to go on. You heard reference to Dawn Maestas, who's on your board now. And Dawn is a woman locally who removes tattoos. A lot of the women come out of the system with tattoos. They might be gang related, they might be otherwise related, but you know, there's some stigma attached to that. And she's been helping our women get tattoos removed that those women don't feel so good about, right? Because there's a lot of stigma attached to that. And as Gina said, lack of life skills. And we take that for granted. And I will tell you, I've been a social worker for 30 years. Funders take that for granted. Somehow, they expect people to go from A to Z like that. You know, that if all of a sudden I meet Gina at MDC and I'm like, hey, girl, we got housing, we got some help, you know, come on. We're going to put her in housing and in 6 months she's good to go. That's not going to happen, right? And so there's a lot we have to do around educating our funders and our community that you can't just expect people to figure everything out that after 20 years of cycling in and out of the system they didn't learn then, they're all of a sudden just magically going to get it now. But we do that. We do that as a society, you know? Even though not one single person in here, I'm guessing, has been able to manifest some behavior change of your own that quickly, right? Right? I'm just suggesting. And not only that, there's the criminal record, there's prior evictions, there's credit records. We sign our name on leases. Why? Because landlords don't want to rent to women who have those issues, right? So once the women are in the housing for a while, they establish a relationship with the landlord, they develop some credibility, then we can, like, you know, they're ready to go. But it takes time. The other thing about what we do and what we know to be true about working with women is that you're in it for the long haul. This is not a 6 month in and out, you know.
Right.
This is, we start working with you while you're still in jail. We work with you. You might come through our transitional program, which Tracy referred to as Maya's Place, which is named after Maya Angelou, who actually has been to Albuquerque and blessed us, and before she passed away, actually just last year, sent us a box of things that belonged to her and graced us with that, and we feel special. And the women who stay at Maya's Place know that story, that here they say, oh, Maya Angelou, yes, you know, who is she? Oh, yes, she hung out with Oprah. She did good things in Africa. And I'm like, yeah, and she sent this stuff to you.
Tracy Bland also got help from Crossroads, and she's now on staff as a case manager. She battled addiction for much of her life until she found Maya's Place at Crossroads.
They put me into my own apartment. Of course, I would have a roommate, and it was wonderful because
in my addiction, it led me down to animalistic is the best way I can describe it. I was defecating behind dumpsters, dumpster diving. My favorite place was Pizza Hut when it would close, because that's where I would get my pizza from. You know, I was, you know, the only thing I did was live and breathe my drug of choice, you know, and I would neglect my whole body, everything. It was all that mattered. And so here I am at Maya's place. They set me up with my birth certificate, my social, all these domains that I didn't know I needed. Life skills, you know, medical health, education. So education was, you know, by the time I was almost done with Maya's place, they helped me enroll back into, at the time, TVI. One of the things that Casey says is that the stigma, well, I have been arrested like over 40 times. There's a clip on me on Cops. You know, that's it's kind of weird being sober now and seeing a rerun of yourself. highly educational. But, you know, the thing is that when I got into school, it was now, ooh, I know what I want to be when I grow up. But then I started to learn, just with my criminal record, there are certain areas of education and degrees and stuff to get into that you can't get into if you have certain charges. So, you know, just to find the people just in the education system that knew what areas that I could get and be when I grow up, you know. Next thing you know, I completed Maya's place, and I got into Crossroads, and Crossroads gave me the key to my own apartment. And oh my God, it was the butterflies of what do I do now? You know, you know, this is how I locked the door. Oh wow, I got in there, and they supplied me with furniture. They taught me how to live, you know, literally clean. I didn't have to sleep on the floor anymore. Jail and prison teach you how to make your bed. And, you know, one of the things I do want to say about being institutionalized, it took me years to break myself from that own cycle. Mm-hmm. Being that I was, you know, a repeated offender, I knew how to live in a structured environment because they supplied everything. Food, tampons, everything. You know, but I didn't know how to transition that into, you know, the world. There was no resources that, besides Maya's place for me, that gave me that, that taught me how to live and transition. So from there, graduated from CNM, UNM, and my former case manager had got her master's and moved forward, and now I'm in her position, doing what she did for me, and it's been amazing. I plan on going for my master's, and you know, it's to find the, you know, the school that won't discriminate on the background check that I have to add to my long master's application and not get denied because I have a long record. So, and that's where I'm at. The recidivism, learning how to, you know, take yourself away from being institutionalized, it's a journey. But I am blessed to be here.
That was Tracy Bland, a former client of Maya's Place and Crossroads for Women, who is now a case manager at the organization. We also heard from Casey Quirk, the executive director of Crossroads, Betty Fleischman, executive director of the New Mexico Women's Justice Project, and Eugenia Smith, a Crossroads client. This is Women's Focus here on KUNM from the University of New Mexico. I'm Megan Kamrick. Thanks for listening.